Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today's show, we're going to go through some incident response and incident management and talk about if you out there might have had a cyber problem or might just be worried that what do I do if I would have them? Today's guest, Jim Eglin, is the VP of Sales and Marketing for StatusCast. What they do is work in the heat of those incidents and help people to resolve and to know what to expect. And that's what he's going to do today, is tell us what to expect. But welcome today, Jim. Thanks for joining.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, Jim. So we, first of all, want to know about Jim. You know, how did you get to where you're at? What's your interest? Do you like the golf? Do you have kittens? What's Jim like here?
Sure. Well, my entire career has been in sales and marketing, primarily with a focus around information technology. Spent a number of years in the litigation support industry, and then spent a number of years in the trenches in the traditional managed services marketplace. But I think technology has always been a passion of mine, particularly in its ability to help organizations be more efficient, reduce costs, and better serve their customers.
Okay. So what was Little Jim like? What do you do on the weekends? Give us some personal stuff here.
Well, Little Jim had a very a different sort of background from, I think, most other Little Jims. My father was a career Navy intelligence officer, so we were fortunate enough to spend a number of years overseas, including tours in Moscow at the height of the Cold War, living just outside of London, and then finishing up in the south of Spain in Cadiz, where I could look out and see the Rock of Gibraltar from our backyard. So
that is interesting. What was it like as a little kid growing up during the Cold War in Moscow? Give us some stories.
Well, it was very much like you'd expect in some of the movies that you see nowadays. The KGB and the Soviet intel was very, very active, and they tried to do their best to stay as close to us as possible.
So you'd see them out in front of the house and stuff?
Well, they would, you know, you'd walk outside and you'd see your friendly KGB agent on the corner. And, of course, our house was searched wherever we left the apartment. And it was all those sort of things that you'd expect to happen that you read about. Most of them are true.
Really? Did they say hi to you? Did you see them like, hey, Jack, how you doing? Or
many Ivans and Igors, not too many Jacks, but over a while you start to recognize them because, you know, they try to blend in, but after a while you just sort of pick up the familiar faces and spot them out of the crowd. So it was a big cat and mouse game.
Wow. Was that scary? Do you remember being scared?
No, not really. Not so much as scary, but it was just something that you had to be aware of. You know, you were there as a diplomat representing the United States, so so your behavior and what you say and do was viewed and monitored a little more closely. You had to always keep in mind that you were a guest in somebody else's country, so that derived a lot of your mannerisms, how you'd interact with the others, what you say, what you do and don't do. So in some ways, it would restrict your childhood, but in many other ways, it allowed me to meet many, many great people from a variety of different countries around the world. We were all in the same boat together.
Interesting. So there was other people from other countries that you were kind of, you weren't like thrown into the mix of all people from another country.
You know, the diplomatic corps and representatives from a variety of different countries, that's a big thing. A lot of social engagement, a lot of interaction with kids and families from other parts of the world. It was just a different sort of environment, which I think is what led me to sort of get into sales and marketing, my ability to interact with others, to fit in, to make friends, to socialize, to be adaptable, to be sociable, are all things I learned at a very, very young age, which I think served well in a career in sales.
All right. Well, let's take a break here. We'll hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back to talk about incident response and get into the meat of what this show is going to be about. Be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today with Jim Eglin, the VP of Marketing and Sales for StatusCast, which we don't get to hear from many marketing people about cybersecurity. So this is actually, I think, a little treat. Before the break, you were talking about your background. And, you know, I couldn't help but my mind to wander to the movie True Lies. You familiar with that movie, the opening scene?
I do, the Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Is that kind of what your life was like, that, you know, the balls with the different people from different countries?
Very, very similar to that, although there's a Netflix series called The Americans is a story of Soviets living here in the U.S. We were sort of like the opposite of that. We were Americans living in Soviet Russia, trying to adapt and blend in. I always joke that my father could speak Russian better than a Russian could.
Because he had to get rid of the accent, right? He had to learn.
We had to get rid of the accent and had to be able to sort of move out and about and take lots of photographs without being suspicious.
So. Yeah. Well, I bet we could talk about this for the whole show, but we wanted to get on to incident response and management and somebody that's heat in the middle of the heat of that. We want to hear examples of what to expect when you're expecting, right? It's going to happen almost to every company, to everybody, that you're going to have to manage an incident, even if you haven't done it now. Me, as also I have a small company, a startup, I would like to know what to expect. You know, I'm waiting that someday there's going to be something that I have to deal with. Give us kind of that high level, you know, here's what people that don't know about this should know.
Sure. Well, when something really, really bad happens, you know, one of the key challenges is being able to keep individuals and people informed of the status of things, right? When things bad are at their worst, there's a tendency to sort of turn inwards, focus on a lot of inward sort of things, where really the focus, I believe, should be more on transparency, open communication, real-time sort of notifications, just to sort of keep people in the loop of things, right? That tends to certainly show that you're responsive, show that you're on top of things, and show that you're willing and able to sort of share what's happening with others.
So if we think to protectionism a little bit, and this is the heart of my company, I've just been violated, I just found this out. Your natural response is don't tell anybody, right? I mean, this seems to go against the natural human response. How do you help people to get kind of through that and over that?
Sure. Well, I think there's an overall belief that being transparent about things can lead into higher levels of trust and credibility. So when you look at the notifications and keeping people aware, we're really talking about your customers, we're talking about your fellow employees, and you're talking about other people that could be impacted by a particular cyber event or a bad incident, right?
Okay, so It seems almost a little bit unintuitive. And whenever I, a lot of people I've talked to, especially that come from the legal side, have said, you know, don't say anything. Contact your attorney. We got to find out what we're going to say and how to make that before we just splatter everything everywhere.
Sure.
And you see this similar thing with people who have had incidents where, we'll say, developers or people that have information within the company have been vocal about it, and they've gone back and tried to do damage control later.
Yeah, absolutely. And my guess is that, you know, there's still a lot of intrusions and a lot of cyber-related activities and attacks that never get reported. Mm-hmm. I think that what you hear in the papers is just really a small subset of things. But if you really start to look and drill down on it, you know, when there's a denial of service attack, when there's something within an organization that affects critical infrastructure, affects your mission critical applications, affects things that your users rely on for their jobs on a day-to-day basis, and now they're no longer able to access those applications, they're no longer able to get email, they're no longer able to visit your website, I think best practice is you may not necessarily have to inform them exactly what happened, but I certainly think it's a good practice to let people know that you're aware of the situation, that you're in the process of remediating it, giving them some sense of when the service or the applications are going to be back online, and just let people know that you've got it's on the radar and you're addressing it. In terms of sharing the root cause analysis of it, that's where you start to get into some of the things that you see in the news that may or may not be actually what happened. That's typically where the spin comes in.
Gotcha. So we're talking about more of a, let's be open that we're addressing it, that we're solving your problem, than let's be open of how we got somebody into our underpants, right?
Absolutely. And then the method of communication becomes critical. So, for example, a lot of organizations rely on email or traditional email distribution lists to let people know about what's happening. One of the challenges, a lot of these attacks actually are affecting organizations' ability to send emails.
Interesting.
So if you're relying on that as the way to let your customers know that they can no longer go to your website and order or go to your website and access your application, your ability to have other methods or multiple channels of communication to get that message out that we just discussed is critical as well.
Interesting. So if we could step back and say, from your experience dealing with this day and night, what is kind of the timeline somebody could expect when they have an incident? What types of things do you see along that, and give us even some time spans that things might take on the average?
To how prepared the organization is in order to deal with those incidents. Organizations that have a solid disaster recovery business continuity plan, where they've made assurances that all their data is properly backed up and they can restore things very quickly, tend to be able to come back online and recover much, much faster. It's the organizations that are caught flat-footed, that don't have some of these best practices in place, that may not have all their critical infrastructure with failovers and backup, and end up, you know, getting hit very, very hard. I remember seeing a study that was done that said something like 80% of small businesses that have a critical attack that keep them, you know, offline for several days end up going out of business. They just can't recover from it, mm-hmm. right? So I think much like any sort of thing, the more prepared you are, the more testing you do, and the more solid of a backup plan you have, then the faster you can recover from these things.
Gotcha. So what do you typically see, though, in somebody that's going through an incident? And we'll say somebody who's not prepared.
Yeah. So in some cases, people that have done the preparation, some of these incidents are almost unnoticeable to the end user. That the failover, that the processes are so streamlined that the user experience is not affected at all, right? Other organizations that have to do restores, it can be days before you access their application. where there's such a domino effect within the business that all sorts of things besides their email, besides their website, besides their online chat, besides their phone systems get affected, right? And I don't know if you've ever experienced that yourself, and there's been a lot of these in the news, that some of these last days, right? The attacks are relentless.
And we're talking somebody infiltrated or more of like a denial of service, somebody?
More like a denial of service where, bots and servers and laptops and devices from around the world are hijacked and they're all directed to go to your particular server or site. Those can be difficult to mitigate and are difficult to stop and slow down if you don't have the processes in place.
All right. Well, let's take a break real quick. We're going to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back to talk to Jim Eglin.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. Today, talking to Jim Eglin, the VP of Sales and Marketing for StatusCast. And we're talking today about incident response. We went through some of, you know, what to expect when you're expecting an incident to happen, basically. And I like to throw that pun in there. But now we're going to look at, Jim's going to give us the idea of the steps through it. So what are the things you can expect? And what will you have to do as you march through this, you know, incident response, the whole process?
Sure.
Of it.
Sure. Well, the first thing, obviously, is you have to be aware that there's some sort of problem. A lot of these intrusions sit dormant in the network for many, many months, sometimes years before they're time activated or remotely activated. So the first thing is being able to have the pulse of your organization and understand when things are starting to get a little awry and say, oh my goodness, I think we may have a problem here. Mm-hmm. The next thing, obviously, is you have to get an understanding of the impact of the problem. Is it a small burning match or is the house on fire?
Before we go back onto the impact, let's talk about that awareness thing, because I hear so often that I've even seen some stats and I couldn't quote them right now that companies don't identify that they have a problem for months, for years,
sure,
for whatever timeline is in there.
Right.
I guess, first of all, do you have any stats like that that says, here's what the average timeline takes for awareness? And then, you know, what if you don't, well, I guess we'll start with that. You know, what is your thoughts on that timeline for awareness? Then I have a follow-on question to that one.
Yeah, so I think that the awareness varies. And I think that the bad guys tend to have a long period of time before the intrusion and when things actually turn on.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, I believe, is because that makes the detection and understanding the event or the events that actually caused the breach that much more difficult to pinpoint. If you have to go back in time and analyze thousands of potential scenarios of how this happened to you, the complexity of that becomes overwhelming. So my sense is that many of these remain dormant, and they do so on purpose because it becomes more difficult to understand how the breaker and the intrusion occurred.
Yeah. What my follow-on question is, what do you say to the company that's like, you know, I don't want to know because I don't want to have to go through this. It hasn't shut
right.
me down. I'm still working. But if I now go seeking to find out if I've been infiltrated and I do find out, then what? How do you start that kind of preparation process?
Sure. Well, I think the underlying message and moral of the story is that nobody is safe. there are numerous automated tools that can be very easily acquired online where folks don't necessarily go after just the big guys. The small and the medium-sized businesses are becoming increasingly better targets because of their inability to react, their inability to put up a fortress around their infrastructure, and their inability to have everything updated, right? Mm-hmm. So they are all almost being viewed as soft targets now.
Okay. So if the next step was identifying the severity. So now that, you know, we've talked about that whole awareness, knowing what you know, talk about that severity piece.
Yeah, so fortunately, on the other side of things, there are tools and there are services that are available that can do a initial assessment, a gap assessment of your environment to identify some of those particular holes that you may have prior to something bad happening. These things typically sort of operate in a domino effect and tend to accelerate internally. So they go from a bad situation, something very, very bad in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm. So if I had to say, you know, I had this happen to me, the severity is 7, you know, what's the judging of severity?
Yeah. So typically the severity is determined by usually the number of applications that are affected or the number of users that are affected, or for many businesses, it's the opportunity cost from a revenue generation standpoint.
Gotcha.
So that if your site or your application or your staff are revenue producers, they're billable staff, there's an e-commerce component to your business, and that is taken away, the opportunity cost from lost revenue and profit of not being able to offer your goods or services to the market is usually what cripples most small businesses.
Yeah, if you're thinking, though, somebody that doesn't know they've been penetrated, it's just something in the background, you know, if you're losing revenue, you know. I mean, boom, you're engaged. But
sure.
If it's something that's been happening for 6 months, you've been penetrated, you don't really know about it, I mean, obviously it's not affecting your bottom line, right?
Sure. And that's where you start to see, I believe, a lot of the state-sponsored infiltration of companies' environments, because they're looking for information, not necessarily to take sites offline or cause networks to go down. It's around intellectual property. It's around financial and personal data. It's information that can be resold on the internet. So the impact oftentimes is even more difficult to ascertain initially, because the impact tends to occur much, much later in terms of your brand awareness, your brand image, your reputation, your research, your development efforts, those sort of things.
Gotcha. And the impact, I mean, maybe you start looking, am I being sold on the dark web? Can we find some of my...
Sure. Or is the design for your latest, greatest sneaker, you know, now I've been copycat produced overseas somewhere, and you just spent $50 million coming up with the tread design of your shoes.
And what do you do? What do you fix? How do you fix
it? Well, that's a challenge. That's tough, because the cat's sort of out of the bag. There are international laws, and then you're basically, you're in pursuit mode. And it's very, very difficult to claw that back.
So, and, you know, there's international patent laws, but for the most part, tracing them down is all at your own expense. And it might be most companies wouldn't do anything.
Most companies are unable to do anything because of the cost, time, and effort, and lower chances of success to do much.
Okay. So now the next thing on your list after the impact was kind of the notification, notifying people.
Sure.
Explain what you mean by that.
Yeah. So notification is where, for example, a user is using an application and there's a degradation in service, or they're no longer able to log on, mm-hmm. What typically happens is users then start calling your help desk. Users start going to social media. Users start calling your customer support center. and they're asking, why is my application running slow, or why can't I log onto your website? Mm-hmm. That creates an additional level of burden on the organization, because not only are they now having to deal with the incident itself and the implications of that, but now they're tasked with potentially having to update and notify hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people with regards to the status of that event and what they're doing to fix it and when it's going to be resolved. Traditional organizations oftentimes rely on email and email distribution lists. And in many times, the services that are affected are actually the email. Mm-hmm. So how do you get that notice out? How do you let all those thousands of people know what's going on so that you don't have a new and additional problem, which is your help desk and customer service line blowing up?
Interesting. And when your customer service line blows up, you end up with a denial of service on your phone system, where you can only handle 100 an hour and you get 1,000 at once.
Absolutely. Then you start seeing Twitter and Facebook and all the other social media sites lighting up, because people want to know what's going on, right? They want to know what's happened. They want to know when the application is going to be back up. They want to know, you know, is this affecting me personally? And, you know, and when can I order the desk from Amazon?
Gotcha. So if you think about the psychological impact of how often I'm down in a problem before I lose customers, do you have any insight on that?
Sure. Well, I think that in today's society, customers and consumers of products and services are increasingly becoming less patient. And I think that's because generalities of sort of our instant now gratification technology, and people have typically many more choices when they're looking to go from a provider for a product or a service, right? So I mean, think about your own experience, maybe going online. You go to a website and something's not working, you simply just go to another website and place your order. Right. So the opportunity costs of that even become more difficult, because you never had any engagement with that prospect or that customer at all.
Gotcha.
Oftentimes, the most damaging folks of your business are the ones that you never hear from.
Interesting. So if we get to the end of the response, the incident response, resolving it and closing the loop, expound on that.
Yeah, so I think once you've gotten through those particular steps, I think you need to have a closed loop process to let people know that the issue's been resolved. All is well, right? And if it's appropriate and applicable, I think you also need to let people know what actually caused the problem. What was the root cause of that? And what are you doing to address that? What technologies have you put in place? What management changes, what processes, whatever you've done to ensure the confidence in your users and customers that this is not going to happen again.
And that's a process that could span months, years, right?
Sure. And it's a process that some organizations are constantly dealing with.
Okay.
It's a constant, we're losing customers because of this, yet we're gaining customers because of the other thing, right?
Gotcha. So you might have three incidents you're handling in the last 6 months, and you're telling people how you resolved them over time for the first one, and the second one we're working on, and the third one we've just started, and you have this almost revolving chain of this process.
Sure. It's never ending, and that goes to not only outages as a result of some sort of cyber incident, but also a plan maintenance. Most large organizations constantly are updating and enhancing and releasing new versions of their software. Same sort of process goes to them. How do you keep them notified and informed of what's happening?
Awesome. Well, as we're kind of reaching the top of our time here, I wanted to give you the opportunity to put out anything about yourself, your company, services you do, how people can reach out to you, and who you would want to engage with you for your products and whatnot.
Sure. So the folks that I would love to reach out to myself and my organization are those individuals that are typically tasked with notifying customers or employees about planned or unplanned IT incidents. Mm-hmm. You can reach me at statuscast.com or James at statuscast.com.
All right. Well, thanks for joining today, James. It's been definitely an interesting show to hear somebody from that deals with this all the time, lives in this area, to tell people what to expect when you're expecting an incident. Well, thanks for joining today, and
glad to be here.
Thanks everybody for listening to New Cyber Frontier.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.